Right now, literally, as you listen to this, billions of neurons in your brain are firing simultaneously. It is this chaotic, wet, dark web of electricity.
Yeah, it's an incredible amount of noise, really.
Exactly. And if we put you in an MRI machine, we might see two separate areas of your brain light up at the exact same millisecond. But here is the ultimate trap of modern neuroscience.
Right, because if area A and area B light up together, how do you know if area A is actually controlling area B or if they're just, dancing to the same background music?
Right, that illusion of correlation. I mean, seeing two things happen at once is
Oh,
easy.
yeah, super easy.
But mathematically proving that one area caused the other to fire, without just guessing and without letting our own human biases shape the results, I mean, that is one of the most difficult diagnostic puzzles in science.
It really is. And breaking through that illusion is basically our mission for today's deep dive.
Yes, we are exploring the invisible pathways of cause and effect inside the brain. We're going to uncover the rigorous, almost impossibly elegant math that scientists use to figure out which part of the brain is driving another.
And we have a great stack of sources today centered around the research of physicist and neuroscientist Mukesh Damala.
Specifically, we're focusing on his groundbreaking 2008 paper published in Physical Review Letters. Our goal here is to decode how researchers read the chaotic firing of your own mind.
Yeah, and to even begin decoding that chaos, we really have to start with a concept called Granger causality.
Right, which sounds intimidating, but it's really not.
Exactly. The foundational idea goes back to a mathematician named Norbert Wiener in 1956, but the core philosophy is just a brilliant way of measuring directional influence in time series data.
Time series data, just meaning measurements taken continuously over time. So,
Okay.
like tracking the electrical voltage of a specific brain region millisecond by millisecond.
Right, so let's set up a scenario. Imagine you have two brain regions, area A and area B.
Okay, got it.
And you want to predict what area B is going to do in the next millisecond. The most obvious first step is to look at area B's past behavior.
Right, if I know what it did for the last 10 milliseconds, I can take a decent guess at what it'll do next.
Exactly. But here is where Granger causality steps in. If using the past behavior of area A combined with the past behavior of area B allows you to predict area B's future significantly better than just using area B's history alone.
Then we cross a mathematical threshold.
Yes, we can safely say that area A exerts a causal influence on area B. Information is actively flowing from A to B.
Okay, let me ground that in the real world for a second. It's like predicting what you're going to eat for dinner.
Okay, I like this.
If I only look at your past dinners, I might guess pretty well. But if I also look at the text messages your spouse sent you an hour ago, and suddenly my dinner prediction gets way more accurate, we could safely say your spouse's texts are causing your dinner choices.
That is the exact logic. And for decades, this was the absolute gold standard for mapping out cause and effect. In 1982, an economist named John Gilweek formalized a way to calculate this Granger causality in the frequency domain.
Meaning we could look at how this causality happens within specific oscillating frequencies, which is obviously crucial when you're dealing with brain waves that, operate at different frequencies.
Yeah, but the complication there is that to actually estimate this Granger causality from raw brain data, scientists historically relied on something called parametric modeling.
Okay, let's unpack this. Parametric modeling, specifically autoregressive modeling, right?
Yes, and this approach had a fatal flaw. In a parametric approach, you can't just let the raw data speak. You are required to build a rigid mathematical model first.
Right, you have to write a predefined equation with specific parameters.
Exactly. And then you force your experimental brain data through that model to get your results.
And this is where the historical method just starts to buckle.
Yeah.
Because an autoregressive model basically tries to predict tomorrow by drawing a smooth line through the averages of the past few days.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So is building a parametric model, like, say, drawing a rigid, highly detailed street map of a city before you've ever actually visited it, and then you just force the real-world traffic patterns to fit your imaginary map.
That is exactly what it's like. And Damla points out that when you do that, this raises an important question because you run into two unavoidable problems. First, your results are completely shaped by the imaginary map you drew. So if researcher X builds one model assuming the past 3 milliseconds matter, and researcher Y builds a slightly different model assuming the past 5 milliseconds matter,
they can feed the exact same raw brain data into their models and get totally different answers.
Completely different maps of causality.
Which is terrifying, honestly. I mean, if you're a neurosurgeon mapping a brain for surgery, or a researcher trying to find the absolute truth of how a disease spreads, you are essentially just finding what you program the model to let you find.
Right. It's a huge issue of bias. But the second problem is a massive technical bottleneck for modern neuroscience.
Because our tech got better.
Exactly. Measurements have become astonishingly precise. We aren't just looking at smooth, rolling ocean waves of brain activity anymore. We can now capture what scientists call spike trains.
Spike trains. Yeah. Our sources describe these as the exact sudden spikes of electrical activity as an individual ion passes from neuron to neuron.
Yeah, it's incredibly granular.
It's not a smooth wave at all. It's a series of sharp, sudden, jagged lightning strikes.
Oh.
You might have zero activity for 100 milliseconds, and then boom, a violent burst.
And parametric models simply choke on that level of complex, jagged spectral oscillation. An autoregressive equation demands relatively smooth, predictable data to function.
Right, it needs the ocean waves, not the lightning.
Exactly. When you force a jagged spike train through it, the math essentially panics and smooths over the sharp features. You end up mathematically erasing the microscopic, highly precise data you just spent millions of dollars on a lab set up to capture.
Wow. So we have these models forcing our brain data into a mathematical straitjacket. How did scientists realize they needed to strip away the model entirely? Like, how do we get out of the way and just let the raw, messy data speak?
Well, the field desperately needed a non-parametric approach.
Non-parametrics?
Right. If parametric means building a model with parameters first, non-parametric means bringing no pre-existing assumptions to the table whatsoever. You just mathematically transform the raw data exactly as it exists in nature.
Okay, so what tools do you use for that?
To do this, scientists turn to tools that are actually quite ancient, mathematically speaking. Fourier transforms, which date back to the early 1800s, and wavelet transforms, which were developed in the 1970s and 80s.
Wait, the 1800s? We were trying to use 19th century math on 21st century brain scans.
Yeah, the math holds up.
I mean, I know a Fourier-Aguirre transform is used to break apart complex signals, but how does that actually work on a brainwave?
Okay, think of a Fourier transform like taking a complex mixed fruit smoothie and running it through a theoretical machine that perfectly separates it back into its raw ingredients.
Okay, I like smoothies.
Right. So it tells you the smoothie is exactly 30% banana, 50% strawberry, and 20% apple. A Fourier transform takes a messy, complex brain signal recorded over time and separates it into its pure constituent frequencies.
So it tells you exactly how much 10 hertz power is in the signal, how much 20 hertz power, and so on.
Exactly.
And wavelets, what do they do?
Wavelets do a very similar job, but they preserve the element of time. See, a Fourier transform gives you an average over the whole recording. Wavelets act like a moving window.
Oh, so allowing you to see how those specific frequencies shift and change millisecond by millisecond.
You got it.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. If Fourier transformers have been around for over 200 years and wavelets have been around since the disco era, why didn't neuroscientists just use them to solve this causality problem decades ago?
That is the million-dollar question.
Like, why were we stuck using the flawed parametric models for so long?
Because there was a massive mathematical roadblock. Running a Fourier or wavelet transform on brain data only gives you what is called spectral density.
Spectral density.
Yeah, it tells you the power of a frequency, and it tells you the coherence between two signals. Coherence just means two brain areas are oscillating in sync.
But wait, coherence is exactly what we talked about at the very beginning. It's not causality.
Exactly.
But because two people are dancing to the same beat doesn't mean one person is forcing the other to dance. Seeing the colors of the rainbow split by a prism doesn't tell you who actually shined the light.
Beautifully put. To get true Granger causality, to prove who is leading the dance, John Gaywick's 1982 formulas dictated that you strictly required two specific mathematical puzzle pieces.
Okay, what were they?
You needed the transfer function, represented in the math as the letter H, and you needed the noise covariance, represented as the Greek letter sigma.
Okay, we need to pause here because looking at the sources, H and sigma feel incredibly abstract. What actually are they in the real world of the brain?
Let's use a highway analogy. Think of the transfer function, H, as the physical rules of the road.
Okay.
It represents the structural properties of the network, like how a signal naturally travels, how it degrades over distance, and how the physical wiring of the brain dictates movement.
So H is the static infrastructure.
Right.
Then what is sigma?
Sigma, the noise covariance, represents the unpredictable drivers entering the highway. It is the raw, new input or random noise constantly hitting the system at any given moment.
Okay.
Geweek's math proved that if you want to calculate true cause and effect, you have to be able to separate the physical structure of the highway H from the new traffic entering it, sigma.
And the Fourier transform didn't give you H and sigma. It just gave you the spectral density, the smoothie ingredients.
Exactly. So scientists were totally stuck.
Man, they knew their assumption-heavy parametric models were flawed. But the non-parametric approach literally lacked the mathematical framework to calculate cause and effect.
Which brings us to the ultimate breakthrough. In their 2008 paper, Mukesh Damala and his colleagues dug deep into the mathematical archives.
What's fascinating here is where they looked.
Yeah, they pulled from highly complex algorithms developed by Wiener and Masani in 1957 and G.T. Wilson in 1972 concerning a concept called spectral density matrix factorization.
Hold on, you're losing me slightly here.
I know, it sounds like a lot.
How does matrix factorization, which sounds like pulling apart a grid of numbers on a chalkboard, suddenly reveal a physical highway of cause and effect in the human brain? What is the actual mechanism?
Let's look at basic factorization first. If I give you the number 15, you can factor it apart into its prime components, right? 3 times 5. Damala's method does this exact same process, but with a massive matrix of brain data. He realized that hidden inside the messy spectral density data, the data the Fourier transform gave us, were those two missing prime components, H and sigma.
Wait, really? So the raw data already contained the answers, we just didn't know how to untangle it.
Exactly. The spectral density matrix factorization algorithm acts as a mathematical scalpel. It takes the raw, assumption-free data matrix and peels it apart, isolating the structure of the network, H, from the raw input driving it, sigma.
That is wild.
Damala proved that you could extract H and sigma directly from the raw data.
Meaning they completely bypassed the autoregressive model. They didn't have to guess. They didn't have to draw an imaginary map.
No guessing required.
They just took the raw, unadulterated spike trains, ran a Fourier or wavelet transform to get the spectral density, and then used this factorization to peel out the exact variables Geweek needed for Granger causality.
Yeah, Damala referred to this as a more principled way to see the data. You are no longer forcing the brain to behave according to your model. You are letting the true causality spectra emerge organically.
And that completely eliminated researcher bias.
Completely. And because it didn't rely on a smooth equation, it easily handled the sharp, jagged reality of high-resolution spike trains.
Okay, so they cracked the math. But math on a whiteboard is one thing. What happens when we actually take this brand new, unbiased, non-parametric lens and point it at a living, functioning, thinking brain?
This is where it gets really cool. The source material details a fascinating application regarding the sensorimotor beta network.
The sensorimotor beta network.
Yeah, this is a highly specific network in the brain that operates at frequencies oscillating between 14 and 30 hertz.
Okay, to set the scene for you listening, imagine an experiment where a subject is simply pressing down on a lever, maintaining a constant steady hand pressure. While they are doing this, researchers are recording the local field potentials. A local field potential is basically a way of measuring the electrical weather happening in a very specific, localized region of the brain.
And the researchers focus their recording on two main areas. First, S1, which is the primary somatosensory cortex.
This is the part of your brain that processes touch and physical feeling. So in this scenario, feeling the physical resistance of the lever against the hand.
Exactly. Second, they recorded M1, the primary motor cortex. M1 is responsible for sending the physical commands down your arm to your muscle fibers to actually push the lever.
Now, we have known for a very long time that these two areas work together during a physical task.
Sure.
But when Damala's team applied the new non-parametric Granger causality spectra to the raw data, the results were incredibly stark.
They really were.
The math showed a massive, mathematically proven flow of information going specifically from S1 to M1.
And this perfectly aligns with physiological reality. S1 is feeling the lever, calculating the exact resistance, and then constantly sending causal instructions to M1 saying, you know, keep pushing, adjust pressure, hold steady.
Right.
The math proved exactly what S1's known role is for sustained motor output. It wasn't just a correlation anymore, it was a proven directional line of command.
But the research goes even deeper than just a simple A to B connection, right? They also looked at how S1 communicates with a different part of the brain called Area 7A.
Yeah, Area 7A.
Now, if you just looked at old school coherence, just seeing who is dancing to the same beat, S1 and 7A are lighting up together. An old model might assume S1 is sending orders directly to 7A.
It's an easy trap to fall into.
But the non-parametric mass looked at it and said, actually, the causal link between S1 and 7A is basically zero.
Yeah, the matrix factorization revealed a hidden layer of infrastructure. It showed that S1 was actually driving an intermediate brain area called 7B, and then 7B was turning around and driving 7A. The pathway from S1 to 7A is not a direct highway. It is strictly mediated by 7B.
I love this specific finding. It is exactly like tracking office gossip or corporate emails.
Oh, totally.
For years, we might have assumed the CEO S1 was sending orders directly to the intern 7A because they both look busy at the exact same time. But this non-parametric math acts like a digital paper trail.
Exactly.
It proves undeniably that the CEO actually emailed the middle manager, 7B, and that manager is the strictly required middleman who then delegates to the intern.
And the reason that specific finding sent ripples through the community is because it perfectly matched physical anatomical connections that were discovered years earlier.
Yeah, wow.
Back in 1991, researchers Fellman and Van Essen literally mapped the physical neurons using scalpels and microscopes, and they found that the biological wiring literally went S1 to 7B to 7A.
That is the holy grail, isn't it? Our new mathematical tool, looking only at invisible electrical waves from the outside, perfectly recreated the physical anatomical wiring diagram of the biological meat of the brain.
It proved without a shadow of a doubt that the math works.
And taking it a step further, because Damala's method utilizes Moorlet wavelets, it isn't just generating a static map. Wavelets preserve time.
Right.
This allows researchers to track these causal pathways as they shift and change in real time, millisecond by millisecond.
Because the brain is never static. It's always adapting.
Exactly. The sources note how this exact same method is now being used to track information flow during visual pattern discrimination.
Which is incredible. Researchers can literally watch the causal pathways of learning and visual attention physically form and dissolve in the brain as a subject processes an image.
And it isn't just for healthy learning brains either. The text mentions it being used to evaluate cardiorespiratory network interactions during anesthesia.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that is a critical application. When a patient is put under anesthesia, the brain, the heart, and the lungs have to maintain a delicate, synchronized balance.
Right. It's very fragile.
Watching how the causal links between those major systems either synchronize to keep the body stable or break down is quite literally a matter of life and death.
And because this method doesn't rely on human assumptions, it can be applied to almost any high-resolution time series data we can generate. Functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRI, MEG, EEG.
Yeah, any of it.
We finally have a rigorous way to test our hypotheses about information flow in both health and sickness without worrying that our statistical model is artificially creating the very connections we are hoping to find.
We have basically moved away from treating the human brain as a black box where we just guess at connections based on correlation. We can now read it as a dynamic, deeply layered system.
So what does this all mean for you? Well, the next time you're scrolling through the news and you see a headline claiming scientists discover how the brain processes fear or researchers find the exact pathway for memory, you don't have to just take it as magic or guesswork. You now understand the rigorous math behind the curtain. You know that to make that claim, scientists likely used Granger causality, Fourier and wavelet transforms, and spectral density matrices. You know the exact tools that strip away human bias and actually prove that cause and effect relationship.
Which honestly brings up a really fascinating final hurdle for other fields of science. As our sources point out, Granger causality is a statistical technique used far beyond the realm of neuroscience.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was originally built to track economics, and it is currently used to track information flow in turbulent fluids, interacting genes, and even massive global climate science models.
Wait, the same math tracking the somatosensory cortex is tracking global weather patterns.
Yes. And historically, those fields like macroeconomics and climate science have heavily relied on the older parametric modeling approaches.
The imaginary maps.
Exactly. They build massive assumption-heavy models to try and figure out what is causing what in the global economy or the atmosphere.
Wow. So if non-parametric Granger causality can decode the chaotic, jagged firing of a billion brain neurons without needing any human assumptions. What long-held, heavily modeled assumptions in climate science or global economics might be completely overturned if we apply this exact same let-the-raw-data-speak mathematical lens to them.
Right. We might discover that the economic CEO isn't actually talking to the intern at all.
It makes you wonder. If we can finally see the invisible gears turning inside the mind without a model getting in the way, maybe we can finally see the true unvarnished mechanics of the world around us.
That's a pretty wild thought.
It really is. Because whether it's a massive global economy or the wet, dark web of the human brain, we finally have a mathematical scalpel to dissect exactly what causes what.